This is the Happy Rant Sports Podcast, in which Ted Cluck and Barnabas Piper rant about old sports, new sports, sports books, sports movies, and anything else related to sports that they feel like. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined, as always, in studio by my good friend and my partner in sports radio, Barnabas Piper. Pipe, we have exciting things to talk about today. We have NBA playoffs things. We have the sizzling red-hot starts of both the Mariners and the Twins, and then also the Mariners completely going into the tank the last couple weeks, which is going to be a little bit sadder for me to talk about than you. But I look forward to talking some baseball, Pipe, and some NBA playoffs. But first, I need your help, man. I need your help putting a sports analogy to a phenomenon that I'm dealing with this week. So if you're new to the program, I'm a college professor. I teach journalism at a Christian college, and I'm at that point in the semester. It's finals week, and this is the point where all the students who have underperformed and been lazy come out of the woodwork to, like, lobby for why they should get a great grade and why I should cut them.
Because grades are subjective, Ted. Don't we know this?
Absolutely. Dude, I feel like everybody craps on this generation for being lazy, but they're actually incredible at, like, at crafting an argument for themselves for something they haven't earned. So, like, yeah,
there's a certain element of, like, oh, you're a hustler. Like, you will go after it. You're just going after the wrong thing at the wrong time.
Dude, right. You're not going to do any work on the front end yet. You're going to advocate passionately for yourself when it's really too late to do anything about it. So, you know, we got on the call today. We got on the radio, and we were both speculating about how there has to be the perfect sports analogy for this phenomenon. Sort of a player who thinks too highly of himself, or a team that had too high of expectations but didn't meet the expectations and still insist that they're a great team. So what do we have on this, Pipe?
Yeah, so two ideas came to mind for me in terms of sort of what is the sports equivalent to the student who turned in everything late or didn't turn it in and still thinks they deserve an A-. One is the team that objectively loses a game or series and then blames the referees. So here's looking at you, Daryl Morey, Mr. Statistical Analysis yourself. You know,
exactly.
You can go audit a series that you guys lost, you know, last year and whine about the referees, but you still lost. And exactly. So there's that option. I think the more accurate one, though, is the player who just declares themselves to be the best when there's so many pieces of evidence that they're like 12 guys better than they are.
Here's looking at you, Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, Kyrie Irving's on this. You know, he has declared himself to be a team leader, even though it seems that nobody wants to follow him or particularly likes him. There's the... Who was it? It was like O.J. Mayo or Lance Stephenson, you know, a few years ago. It was like, I'm the best guard in the NBA. That's really the equivalent. It's not even the guy who's in like the top 10. It's the guy who's maybe an eighth man.
Exactly.
Who's always borderline not going to get another contract. Who's like, no, I believe I'm the best. That's the guy who shows up in your office yesterday and says,
absolutely,
can I get an A despite not doing the work?
Dude, Kyrie would be an incredible college student in 2019. He would be the guy that, like, talks a little bit too much in class about things that don't exactly matter. He would be the guy that, like, runs for student body president and wins because nobody else runs and then declares himself an amazing leader. Kyrie would be, and a lot of students fall into this category. He would be like the amazing resume guy, but you still wouldn't want to hire him. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm looking at you on paper and everything kind of makes sense. Everything falls into place, but I still don't want you on my team. You know, I feel like that's Kyrie, the student.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's the and the thing is, because he really does have everything going for him, except for the fact that he's utterly unlikable.
That's it. Yeah. Like even a name that we compared him to, a Reggie Miller, right? Great 90s NBA basketball name, played for the Indiana Pacers. He was a legend. Opposing fan bases hated him. His fan base loved him. He kind of played in a mid-major city. Reggie had the begrudging kind of respect of everyone. But yeah, Kyrie doesn't even have that, man.
No, it's, not his own teammates, not his own coach. I don't even think his fan base, like, I think fan base is when he comes to the team, they're like, oh, we want to like this guy. So in Cleveland, he was the number one overall pick, you know, like, we, they want to like this guy. And then, but he was always like, the whiny little brother to LeBron. And plus, that was LeBron's city at that point. And yeah. then he goes to Boston, and Boston, you know, Boston's ready to embrace anybody on their teams. Like, they love their players, and he's just gone out of his way to be unembraceable. And he's a challenging case. I think we should probably call the phenomenon of your students. I propose we call it the Lance Stephenson phenomenon.
Yeah, I love it.
The irrational confidence based on absolutely nothing, with no track record and utter certainty of success.
Also, I just love the idea of something being named after Lance Stephenson.
Yes,
that's a good thing. Yeah, Kyrie is like he's like that transfer student now that comes in and talks about how amazing they were at their last college. Like, well, I got 4 points in all my classes at my last college. I don't know what the deal is here. You know.
You mean the junior college, that one? Yeah, good job.
exactly. Well, I'm glad we got that sussed out, Piper. I'm glad we got it squared away. And
I would like you to start referring to these students as Lance. So when they leave your office, just go, "Thanks for stopping in, Lance." And just, I think that would enhance the whole interaction.
I think it would be good. I think it would be really good, and it would also be a way for me to retain a little bit of pride and sanity this week because. Yeah, continuing to answer these emails, it is a life sucking proposition. Make no mistake about it. Pipe, do you feel like? I feel like when I was in college, and maybe it was a little bit different when you were there because you're a few years younger than me. When I was in college, I never addressed my professors unless I absolutely had to. Like, I was never lobbying for a grade. I would never send that email of, well, you know, would you take another look at my paper? You know, like. I just didn't do that. Whereas I feel like everybody in 2019 is a lobbyist.
See, I would make requests. I did this once or twice, but it was always with full knowledge that I had dropped, like I had just flopped. Because especially my first couple of years in college, I just didn't go to class that much. And I just decided I didn't like classes and I wasn't going to go.
Yeah.
For my younger listeners, that's a bad idea, and that's a really crappy attitude. Don't be like me.
Dude, listen to my first 2 years of college thing. I would go because my dad had made this offhanded comment one time about how he never skipped a college class. So I felt this like Puritan sort of compulsion to go, but then I would just leave early, which I think is even worse than your thing. It's even more rude. So, young listeners, don't be like either of us. We were the worst our first 2 years of college.
Yeah. It took me 5 years out of college to figure out, probably about 5 years to figure out what it means to have a work ethic. So, if you figure it out now, college students, you'll be way better off. But I would go to professors and say, basically, full admission, I know I have been lazy and didn't do any work. Is there anything additional I can do to earn a few extra points?
Oh, yeah. The anything additional email. Absolutely.
Which is probably equally as dumb, but at least it's coming from a place of, look, I'm a screw up, but would you throw an opportunity my way just to show you that I can do work, as opposed to, I didn't do any work, give me free things.
Dude, let me tell you, I would kill for the can I do anything extra email at this point. Like, you hardly even get that anymore because it's all just advocating. Pipe, I have another question for you vis-a-vis college students in 2019. Do you feel like they, and I'm talking about like writing-related classes now or anything creative. I feel like back in the day, we had an innate sense of sort of where we stood in relationship to other people. So like when I was in college, I was operating under no like misconceptions that I was the best writer, in part because I had never thought of myself as a writer and I'd never really tried it. I don't know. I feel like now, you know, a student can be in classes, like workshopping their work all semester. I can give them a B and they can be like, well, I just really feel like, you know, my stuff, fill in the blank. And it's like, really, like what class have you been sitting in all semester? I don't know. I feel like there's some delusion. There's some self-deluding going on.
Absolutely. It's like the American Idol phenomenon, except just in the classroom, you know, where they're like, well, I know I can sing. And you're like, no, the entire nation just watched you not be able to hit a note. Clearly can't sing.
Dude, right. And then they get onto that little interview at the end and they're like, well, nobody's going to derail my dreams. I know I can do this.
My mom said I could sing. I'm like, well, your mama didn't love you enough to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
And Yeah, I think that's true. And back to sports, you see the same thing there where people are like, well, no, I should be the starting quarterback. You have a noodle arm and can't read a defense and get sacked every third play. Like, you very clearly shouldn't be the starting quarterback.
Right. Like, what practices have you been going to? You know, like, what are you seeing that I'm not? It's fascinating. And I feel like we need sports because sports, Pipe, it's the last bastion of, like, true objectivity in our culture.
Yes. You can still be delusional in the midst of it because ego is a heck of a drug. But generally speaking, the results speak for themselves and you just get the shine knocked off you if you're bad.
Absolutely, man. And it's so good, though. Like, it's such a growing, healthy kind of thing to have happen. And let me lay a little existential thing on you. Something I'm enjoying is like an older man. I love watching the ends of games, like the end of any game. Even if I don't really care about the teams, I just love the finality of it. I love the kind of squared off, the neatness of there's a winner, there's a loser. It's indisputable. I'm just really enjoying that, whether it's baseball, whether it's the NBA finals. We had a great end of a game last night. The Toronto Philly game in the NBA finals, which we should probably talk about, but I find myself in this age of ambiguity and in this age of like constant lobbying, like really leaning into the objectivity of sports in a way that I don't think I did before.
Well, yeah. And the thing about sports is unless it's the last game of somebody's career, there's always sort of the, like, you live to fight another day. So
yeah,
you know, baseball, we both love baseball. There's 162 games. And so baseball is one of those things. So I was watching the Twins a couple days ago playing the Tigers. The Twins were down by 2 runs going into the bottom of the ninth. They get a guy on base and like there's this bated breath.
Yeah.
That the tying run is at the plate. They end up not getting any runs across and so they lose. And so objectively, like, they did not do what it took. And there was no whining. There was no, we deserve to win. There was just, frustrating. We didn't do what it took. We'll be back tomorrow to play again. And that is, there doesn't seem to be that level of like clean cut as well as just sort of the, I will do better next time attitude in any sort of subjective climate, you know,
dude, there isn't,
creativity. I was about to say the classroom, except the classroom is supposed to be objective.
It's totally not, though. I mean, it's totally not. I mean,
it's like you've turned into, instead of a professor, you're like an Olympic judge.
Dude, right. You're
like, I'm going to give you an 8.7. And they're like, no, I deserve a 9.3. And you're like, well, no, it's an 8.7 because I'm the judge. But they're like, that's subjective.
It's wild, man. It's so wild. And you're really just a facilitator. And yeah, it almost makes me wish, and I love my job. Let me caveat it by saying that. I really do love.
Just not this week.
Yeah, not this week. I love teaching writing and I love helping writers get better. And I don't even mind grading. Like I enjoy reading their work and commenting on it and all that stuff, but it's just it's actually the physical act of assigning a letter grade and then just knowing beyond a shadow of a doubt that I can name the 6 students right now that I'm going to get emails from. You know, like I can set my watch by the protest emails that I'm going to get. And it's just that aspect of it is kind of daunting. And that's the part of it that makes me wish I had chosen a career in sports. Because even writing in this day and age, like, it's much less satisfying. You know, every written work is just an invitation to like have people yelling and screaming over some aspect of it. So, I find myself envious of, you know, athletes, football players, football coaches, baseball players. I mean, these guys, not that they haven't made, but theirs is it's a bit simpler of a life in terms of, you know, I think you always know where you stand in sports, and that's part of what's cool about it. But you're right. I mean, the end of a game is never really the end, and that the Sixers will be back next year. So let's transition a bit into NBA talk, Piper. We had an unbelievable finish last night. Toronto closed out the Philadelphia 76ers, and the process in a game 7 went right down to the wire, went right down to the last shot. It was an incredible high arcing shot that bounced around a whole bunch and then went in, allowing Toronto to advance. What are your thoughts on the Sixers at this point, Pipe?
They are, first of all, I think they're going to fire their head coach. I think Brett Brown was, you know, he deserves a lot of credit for weathering that process, you know, going from we have 0 NBA players to we have multiple number one picks. Yeah. And have signed some free agents and were a legitimate contender. But he's just not a very good coach. He's not creative. He can't figure out how to put guys in position to win. He mismanages the minutes of their most valuable player, Joel Embiid. I don't know that he's a bad NBA coach, but he's not a championship level coach. And they are at a point where they need the coach who can get them to the championship, because I think they were good enough to go this year, talent wise. Like, they're not measurably different in talent from Milwaukee or Toronto or Boston or whoever in the Eastern Conference, but they weren't coached well. I think the other thing is it's going to take a really creative mind to figure out if and how Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid can play together, because the NBA is a league where if you have multiple bad shooters on the floor at the same time, and Ben Simmons isn't even a bad shooter, he just doesn't shoot. It's really hard to run an offense.
Dude, it is. Dude, do you feel like there was something lacking in Embiid as an alpha? Like, don't you think this was kind of his time to, like, rise up, take over, be the superstar that we all kind of want him to be and think that he is, except that he was always tired or always had the flu or, you know.
I mean, I think that's possible. I think – so a couple thoughts on that. First is, due to his health issues, he might – I mean, it's possible he just will never be in great enough shape to put up – you know, to regularly play 44 minutes in a playoff game. You know, I think that's – I think he played 48 or something like that in this game. I don't know that he sat at all.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit. But then the other thing is, no NBA player – outside of LeBron, takes their team to the finals under the age of like 25 or 26.
Yeah.
I mean, Tim Duncan went, but that was David Robinson's team and then transitioned to him. No, it takes every great player takes their lumps before they get over, you know, they get over the hump to be a championship player. And I think this is part of it for him. I think, just getting a devastating loss will either prove that he is nothing or make him, you know, a top five player.
Dude, how old is Giannis?
He can't be much older than 24 or 25. He came into the league at 19.
Yeah.
So he's, I mean, he's young.
Yeah.
And a monster already. I think, so here's a take on Ben Simmons. Do you remember Rajon Rondo when he was young and athletic?
Yeah, totally.
Isn't Ben Simmons just a 6'10 Rondo, but without the alpha gene?
Yeah, I think he is. I think he is. I mean, that's a great comparison.
He will not shoot, period. Yeah. And the difference is that Rondo would actually have monster playoff games, you know, put up like 29, 12 rebounds and 16 assists and stuff like that. Or he put up 40 in one game because he just wouldn't stop going to the hoop.
Right.
And Simmons just doesn't have that, but he plays the exact same game as Rondo.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right, man. Simmons is like, he's like me in pickup games. Like, if I get a wide open shot beyond like a certain point, I'm not taking it. Just because I have no faith in myself. I have no confidence that I'm going to make it. So the question is, like,
and for him, that range is about 8 feet.
Like, dude, exactly. That's my range too.
If it's not a hook shot, he's not putting it up.
Dude, right. He's like late career me, which is bad, right? I mean, you don't want your second, like the second superstar in your team just shooting 8 foot baby hooks all night, like an old man. So it begs the question, can he develop what he needs to develop? And it's so funny because it's like, if my kid was really serious about basketball, I would have him out in the, you know, out in the yard shooting like 17 footers all summer, and he would develop that. You know what I mean? So it begs the question, what is this guy doing in the gym in the off season? Ostensibly he's working on this, right? So maybe the piece is more mental than physical, do you think?
Well, I think it's absolutely mental. I mean, well, they've had the two biggest head cases when it comes to just like the basketball version of the yips that I can remember. Because Markelle Fultz was on that team, and then he just was sort of banished to Orlando for a bag of basketballs and a pump or something like that. And Fultz was the number one overall pick, and he's just gone from basketball memory at this point. And he's another guy who was a good shooter in college and then got to the pros, changed his shot, and completely lost it.
Yep.
And Simmons wouldn't shoot in college either.
Yeah.
He took like 2 threes in college or something like that. And it's definitely mental. And I think for some guys, there's nothing you can do to get past that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's one thing. So like Rondo being an example, Rondo would shoot threes. He was just a bad shooter. You know, shot whatever, 29% on threes, but there are games he'd hit three or four because he just, you know, kind of was feeling it that game. And then there were games he'd go 0-for-5 regularly. He wasn't a great free throw shooter and he wasn't a great jump shooter. Just, it was I think it was a physical thing. Like he just didn't have a good feel for shooting. With Simmons, it's just like nobody knows if he has a feel for shooting, including him, because he won't shoot.
Exactly. Exactly. No, it's crazy, man. It's really wild. So, Kawhi is 27.
Goodness, so he seems like he's like 46.
Dude, he does. He seems like he's been around forever. So he fits your age paradigm, though, of like a team who's ready to take his team to a championship.
Well, don't forget, he was already an NBA Finals MVP at like 23.
Right. Again, though, not his team, but still, right. You're right. Like the experience is there. And now he has his own team. There are some really interesting, like, you know, kind of second tier pieces on that team. Does this Toronto team have does this have legs, Toronto to the finals, or is Milwaukee just gonna like crush this dream completely?
I think that really depends on if the secondary guys. So Kyle Lowry has a poor history of playoff performance. Great regular season player. He's a little bit older, a little bit less athletic, but he just doesn't seem to have. He doesn't seem to have the confidence or something in big games. Everybody else on that team is kind of new to the playoffs, although Marc Gasol is not. He played on a bunch of those grit and grind Memphis teams.
Yep.
So the question is, can those guys perform well? Because I think it's a good matchup. It'll be fun.
It will be.
Very different kinds of teams, two great stars. Like Giannis and Kawhi are so fun to watch because they're just unorthodox superstars. And so I'm excited about this because, when was the last time the Eastern Conference had a fun – I mean, it was like Cleveland-Boston was the last time there was a fun Eastern Conference Finals matchup.
Exactly. Yeah, they seem like decent dudes too. Those are two stars that, you know, regardless of how that series breaks, you're happy to see either of those guys with their own team in the finals.
The other piece of it that's fascinating is, so like, Milwaukee's a team on the rise. You know, there will be some roster turnover there, but it seems like – however it goes this year, they'll be back next year.
Yeah.
Toronto could be in the lottery next year because Kawhi might sign with the Clippers. Yep. And in which case they'll probably trade Kyle Lowry and, or he might be a free agent too. I can't remember. In which case it's like they're building a team around Pascal Siakam and expiring contracts. Good luck with that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. No, you're right, man. This could be it for Toronto for sure. How bad do you want to see Golden State lose? Is this a thing for you? Because it is for me.
No, it's not. I have tipped into I love dynasties.
Oh, yeah. You're I love dynasties
guy.
I love dynasties guy.
And here's the thing. I also love when great teams are defeated because that's a great part of sports. So, for example, let's say going to the NFL. You and I both love New England. Just watching them play. I think you're more of a fan and I'm more of an appreciator.
Yeah, for sure.
But the other thing is it's crazy, but I think Golden State is underappreciated. They're hated maybe an appropriate amount because all the chips have fallen their way.
Yeah.
But name the problems with that team other than the fact that Draymond Green is a pain and nobody likes him. So he's hateable.
Sure. Yeah.
Everything else about that team is basically the problem is they've accumulated more talent than everybody else, but they didn't cheat to do it.
Yeah, that's true.
They have done what they're supposed to do, which is to defeat all comers.
Yeah.
They, you know, my favorite thing about how they closed out Houston was that it was without Durant and without Boogie.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
And they still beat Houston.
Yeah.
Because they still have the two best shooters in the NBA on that team without the NBA's other best scorer. And I don't know, like, I don't see a lot to hate on that team other than the fact that we like to hate success.
Yeah, I think that... for me, it's just the sick of it factor.
Yeah,
like sick of them, sick of looking at Steph Curry. Like, you know, he's no longer charming. We've talked about this, right?
Right, that's like, true. But he's the fact that he's no longer charming. Like, we've attached too much appreciation for him to like being the clean cut wonder boy, and have failed to realize that he's a transcendent talent and the greatest shooter in NBA history.
Yeah,
like we are watching the greatest shooter in NBA history, and it's not close.
Yeah,
They're I mean, he's going, barring breaking both his ankles, he's going to break all of the 3-point records in terms of just quantity, number of threes hit. He's a great percentage shooter despite shooting like 14 a game. He's still, as far as we know, a great guy in terms of his marriage and his parenting and his community work. And like, there's nothing to hate about him except that we've seen too much of him and have gotten tired of him.
Yeah.
That's a bad reason to hate people.
Dude, it is. And I don't hate him.
Right. Like, I know you don't like wish ill upon him as a person.
No, I don't wish ill upon him at all. I think it's just, it's a lazy fan thing, to be honest, because I consider myself such a careful and sort of accomplished football fan in the sense that I know the sport. I love the sport. I'm a deep admirer of all things Belichick in New England and the way he does things. Like, I don't have that same level of commitment to basketball. So as a result, my response is just, I'm sick of seeing this team. Like, I'm sick of these guys,
And my thinking always tips to, who will I miss when they are gone?
That's
who will
true.
I miss watching? And realizing that Steph Curry is like 31 or 32, he's pretty close to that anyway. He's 30-ish. For a guard, that means he probably only has 2 to 4 really good years left. Four would be aggressive at this point. Because look at Chris Paul, 33, 34, and he's a shell of himself. Still a great player when he's healthy, but he's healthy a third of the time.
Yeah.
And so we're going to miss Steph Curry when he's gone.
Totally.
We're going to miss Kevin Durant when he's gone. We're going to miss LeBron when he's gone. And it doesn't matter how much you dislike these guys. Because, I mean, I think back on 90s basketball. I hated Chris Webber. I hated Kobe Bryant. I hated these guys in the Western Conference. But when they retired, it was like, oh, I really liked hating those guys. I really liked watching them because they were fantastic. It's going to be like that. And I think the other thing
is
in this era of player movement where guys – like no team stays together for very long, a team that can consistently be dominant is kind of rare. So I'm not rooting for them to win. I think it would be fun to see an upset. Yeah. But if they win, it just feels like I got to be part of watching an amazing thing in history.
Yeah, it's true, man. I mean, it's the basketball analog to what's happening in New England in football. Yeah. Like – In the era of free agency and player movement, it's almost impossible to do what those two teams have done. Like, to keep roster continuity and decide to build around the right pieces and just get it right, you know, to get it right year after year and manage the cap and manage salaries and expectations. They've just done it right, you know, and you're absolutely correct in saying that it's a really fun thing to watch. I should appreciate it more. Rather than just wanting to see them lose. But who's your favorite Warrior? Steph Curry off the table. I think Klay Thompson would be the funnest hang on the Warriors.
Yeah.
Like if I had to hang out with one of them, it would be him.
I think Klay is the one guy on that team who I constantly wonder what he would be like on another team.
Yeah.
Because he's so chill and fits a role there that, you know, like the game when he put up, what was it, 60 whatever points?
Yeah.
And he dribbled the ball, I think he had the ball for a total of like a minute and 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Because it was like catch off a screen, bang, there's another three. And he dribbled the ball maybe 11 times or something like that. That's just a unique, but he can dribble the ball. He's a great defender. He's the second best shooter in the NBA. I don't know. I just feel like if you put him on the Sacramento Kings, he'd average like 28 a game, lead the league in 3-pointers, and, you know, be all NBA. But instead, he's just winning a bunch of finals and being super happy where he is and gets along well and has never made waves. I think he's definitely underappreciated. And then I think Andre Iguodala is the other guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he flies under the radar. He was an all-star for a few years in Philadelphia before signing with Golden State and immediately became their sixth man.
Yeah.
And like the glue guy who he can lock down on defense, you know, make life really difficult for Harden. As much as anybody does. And good facilitator on offense, understands who the best players are, how to set them up. And again, just keeps on quietly ticking. And I don't understand how those guys have sort of suppressed their ego in an era where like the league is full of Lance Stephensons.
Dude, I need more Andre Iguodalas in my classroom and less Lance Stephensons, you know?
Yes.
Give me some Andres. I can work with that. Interesting stuff, Pipe. I do love Iguodala. And I love the fact that, like, he used to be a superstar. you know, he was sort of the guy. He was the high flyer in Philly. And
yeah, he was the AI after AI. Like, that was the thing. They went from AI to, like, AI part two. And then he signed a free agent contract with Golden State and has kind of disappeared, but also had an incredible career because of it.
Absolutely. No, man, there's a great lesson in that, you know, and that's another, I think, great thing that sports can teach, you know, this generation and us too. You know, I mean, even in our fields, you know, it can be all about, I don't know, platforming all the time and making sure your audience is bigger than the next guy's and, you know, making sure you're getting all the conference bookings and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, man, there's stuff to be learned from the Andre Iguodalas of the world. And I think we can have longer, happier careers if we, you know, if we pay attention to guys like that from time to time.
For sure.
So let's talk about some less happy matters for me, Piper, as a baseball player. Or not a baseball player, as a baseball fan, rather. I want to talk about the red-hot start that was experienced by my Seattle Mariners and then their, like, subsequent decline here recently. It's been the tale of two seasons for us. And I want to hear about a little update on the Twins because things are going much better in your neck of the woods. So, Pipe, I want to read you some scores. So this was an early season series that we had against the Boston Red Sox. In fact, it was our first series of the entire season. So we won the first game 12-4. Second game we lost 7-6. Third game we won 6-5. Fourth game we won 10-8. So we took 3 out of 4 against the Red Sox to start the season. Then we took two straight against...
Which was way more impressive before we realized the Red Sox suck.
Exactly, although they're playing well now. We took two straight against Anaheim. Lost to the White Sox, but then hung two big beatings on the White Sox, actually 3-9-2, 12-5, 13-5 against the Royals. So we had some major, major run production early in the season out of Seattle, but then our very last series, Pipe, I think we gave up a record number of runs in a 3-game series to the Red Sox. So we lost 14-1, 9-5, and then 11-2. And it seems like we're bringing up a bunch of young guys now from the minors. And we've kind of, the season has become, in a sense, what we thought it would be, which was just a rebuild and an exercise in, like, player development. But I think the first couple weeks of the season, it was kind of a teaser, man. I kind of got on board with the whole idea that we could be good this year. So I'm now into player development mode.
And I think as still a relatively new baseball fan, the thing that you will become accustomed to if you're willing to stick with it is that no month in baseball matters. Mm-hmm. You know, a good month or a bad month, it kind of doesn't matter. Not in
Dude, that's another really cool thing about the sport, you know, and it's another thing that you can sort of parallel in the classroom. Like, you have a couple of bad exams or a couple of bad papers, like this is the long game, right? It kind of doesn't matter what you do as a sophomore, as long as you've got the skills that you need when you graduate.
Right. Yeah. And if you're like me, you know, you have like a 1.3 GPA after your freshman year. And so, yeah, you have set yourself back. It's a steep climb out of that hole, but you can graduate with a decent GPA, at least in your major classes and things like that. But yeah, so I think for the Mariners, it's fun when your team is on a roll. It's just fun to win. And, you know, if you want to get nerdy about it, if you're a statistically inclined person, you can look at how they were winning those games and go, oh, this was not sustainable. You know, guys with no track record are killing the ball. Young guys are, you know, pitchers. The league just hasn't figured them out yet. It's the kind of their first time through the league.
Yeah.
That happens all the time where guys will get called up from the minors, tear it up for about 4 or 5 starts.
Yep.
And then there's film on him and they go, oh, he always throws this pitch in that count. Lay off the first pitch, you know, lay off the curveball because he can't throw it consistently, just sit on the fastball, whatever it is. And that's, you know, then it becomes the long game of adjustments and counter adjustments where, so, you know, will the pitcher then figure out the league and be able to make the adjustments? And that's where the Mariners are, which, like you said, it's what you expected to start with. So it's not like a crushing disappointment. It's just, oh, bummer. That run's over.
Dude, let me ask you this, and I don't know if you're in a place where you can do this, but as you look at our roster, what players do you like?
And let me pull it up. I don't have their roster in front of me.
I wonder if they're going to be the same players that I like. Because there are some guys on our team that I hope stay here for a long time and who I'm really enjoying. But then there's some other guys that I'm like, I'm not seeing it necessarily.
All right. Active roster, Seattle Mariners. All right, let's see here. The first three names are guys I've never heard of. Well, actually, as I'm looking through your pitchers, I only recognize the names of three of them.
Who are the three? Marco Gonzalez.
Nope, I didn't know that name, I don't think. So Yusei Kikuchi, who is a signing out of he was one of the top Japanese pitchers. And
Yusei's been fun, man.
Yeah, he's
been really fun.
And he's
Yusei really like pitches in the strike zone really well. Like, he throws strikes that are hard to hit. He's been really good. I think he's going to be a nice player.
He throws gas, too. Like
he does.
I kind of, when I saw that they signed him and I saw that he was a left-handed six-foot pitcher, I'm like, oh, he's a crafty lefty, sort of, you know, cliche. The others who I'm familiar with are Anthony Swarzak, former Twin, decent bullpen guy, and then Mike Leake, who's sort of a journeyman innings eater. Surprising career because he's 5'10 and 170 pounds. I was 170 pounds in like fifth grade. So,
Mike Leake has been really bad this year.
Well, Mike Leake is never good. Mike Leake at his best is league average, but he's the kind of guy who keeps getting a job because you're like, well, we need somebody who can go 5 to 6 innings in that fifth starter spot. Except for him, he's probably their second starter. So,
dude, right. I mean, he's kind of the middle of the rotation guy, but. You know, Wade LeBlanc is still there. I like Wade, but less because of his pitching and more just, you know, for other reasons.
He's just like another version of Mike Leake too, kind of.
Yeah. Dude, Felix Hernandez is past it.
Yeah. Well, and I'm looking at the active roster. I think some of those guys are, I should probably pull up the 40 man, but some of those guys, I think Felix is on the injured list right now, but he, you know, he's still fun to watch when he's on, but it's like once every 3 to 4 starts. So it's like 1.5 times a month. He goes well.
Marco Gonzalez, I like a lot. He's 5-2. Okay. He's more of a stuff guy. Like he's not overpowering.
Okay.
But let's look at the hitters. Who do you like hitter wise?
Well, it's fun seeing Tim Beckham on a roster because he was a really high. Well, him and JP Crawford both really high picks. Crawford's a little bit more of a prospect.
Yeah.
The fact that he has made a career after how bad he started is kind of fun.
Yeah, he was a first rounder to Tampa Bay in 2008.
Yeah, I think Crawford has a bright future. D. Gordon's got to be your best hitter.
Yeah.
He's fun. And then Daniel Vogelbach is. He's just a pleasure to watch because he is 6 feet and 250 pounds. So that is 50 pounds more than me and 2 inches shorter than me, which makes me really happy.
Dude, Vogie is incredible, man. When he gets a hold of it, he crushes the ball. He's a great fat guy.
And then Domingo Santana, he was on the Brewers last year, right?
Yep.
Sort of a free-swinging, monster power hitter who strikes out a ton. I said D. Gordon's probably your best hitter. Mitch Haniger's probably your best hitter.
Let me look at the numbers. I think D's hitting his batting average is better than Mitch's.
Haniger's he's kind of maybe a better all-around player. And then Edwin Encarnacion, he's a player I want to like, but I loathe him.
Why?
Because he has absolutely eaten the Twins alive. Because he was first he was on Toronto, then Cleveland. And when he was on Toronto, he and what was the other guy's name? Jose Bautista.
Oh, yeah.
They were like Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig against the Twins. Just 8 target field for lunch. And then he does that stupid parrot arm thing when he's rounding the bases after hitting a home run. And I just wanted to punch him. But mainly out of jealousy. Like, not because I actually hate him. I was just like, he did it again and he's so good.
He's another great fat guy, man. We've got 2 premium fat guys on our team right now.
Well, and the funny thing is, Edwin didn't used to be. He's become fat because he's 2 months older than I am. Which, in major league terms, is very old.
Yeah.
And he can still hammer the ball.
He can. And he kind of carries all his weight in, like, his face and his neck.
Yeah, he's a pie face for sure.
He carries it very differently than Vogie. But 2 great fat guys. Do the Twins have any legendary fat guys this year?
So the Twins' best fat guy, they don't have, like, they're a very athletic team this year, which is mildly disappointing from an aesthetic standpoint.
Yeah.
The Miguel Sano, who has been injured all year, has. Yeah. I mean, he's less fat and more like just mountainous. You know, so he's not like big like John Kruk gut kind of thing. As much as like, you remember Frank Thomas was just a mountain.
Oh yeah, just a huge guy. Frank Thomas looked like he could have played defensive end in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, well, Frank Thomas was. I think he played tight end.
He was
at
a football
Auburn.
Player at Auburn. Yeah, you're right.
And
you're right,
now Miguel is not quite as muscular as that, but he's a little bit more that way. But just, but definitely a little bit more squishy.
Yeah.
Then the other one, the pitcher, also former Mariner, Michael Pineda, for the Twins, is, I mean, the man is shaped like an S curve in terms of like the belly bulge and the butt bulge. Just he's 6'7". He's got to be at least 300 pounds. I'm sure they list him at 250 or something, but he's he's three bills easy. And just,
that's fantastic.
I love fat pitchers, like fat power hitters and fat pitchers, because the only thing they can do is one motion.
Yeah.
And then any physical movement that requires fielding the ball or running the bases is just cumbersome.
Guys like that, though, who are fascinatingly good at the one motion, like that's, I'm always going to be here for that guy, you know? So who are some of the great fat pitchers in history?
I mean, Bartolo Colon is the all time. Well, he's probably the all time, like he stayed good as he went from, like, he was fairly athletic, kind of thick build when he was, you know, 23. By the time he retired at 44, if he's officially retired, he was 300 pounds easy. And still, just that one motion is what he could do. David Wells was a fun one.
Oh, yeah, David Wells.
David Wells, I mean, it was straight up beer belly. Like, he had the twiggy arms and the twiggy legs and then just that gut and the mustache. Yeah. Oh, let's see. I'm sure there's a bunch of others. There's been I don't know. I can't remember if Rod Beck was really, if it was just his Fu Manchu that made him look really, like he had a Fu Manchu and a mullet.
He looked like he should have been a fat guy.
Yeah, like I think he was a pretty big dude.
I think he was too.
I'm trying to think. Man, baseball, like all the sports have just learned so much about sports science that the fat guy is an anomaly now. Like there used to be more fat basketball players. There used to be a lot of fat defensive linemen, and now everybody's just an Adonis and boring.
CC Sabathia, is he fat?
Yeah, he's
a little fat.
Well, here's the thing. He was fat and he's leaned out a lot. Like, I think he went vegan.
He
was like the left-handed Michael Pineda in terms of just being a big, big dude. And then he now he's leaned out. I mean, he's another one though who's figured out. He's fun because he went from being kind of overpowering big lefty to still making it work with 7 miles per hour less on his fastball and just some inconsistencies. And he's still making a career out of it.
Dude, remember Dimitri Young? This is a hitter, not a pitcher, but from the old Tigers. Yeah, he's a great fat guy.
Delman. Well, the Tigers have some classic, like Cecil Fielder's maybe the all-time great fat hitter.
Yeah, you're right.
He was like a slow pitch softball guy. Like, you look at him and you're like, that swing doesn't make any sense in a league where people throw moving pitches.
Yeah.
And he killed it for a few years. He wasn't a good average hitter, but he crushed the ball.
Dude, remember a pitcher from like the late 80s, early 90s named Rick Rushel? Played for the Giants. He was less of like a total fat guy, but just kind of looked like a dad, you know? He had the kind of sloppy dad, the dad build. He was fun. Who else, man? There's got to be some great fat guys that we're forgetting.
Oh, I mean, in terms of hitters, I mean, I mentioned John Kruk earlier.
Yeah, for sure.
Matt Stairs was a fun one.
Oh, yeah, Matt Stairs was a good one.
Who else? Let's see. I'm sure listeners are shouting their favorite fat players. There's been a number of catchers who you look at and you're like, I don't know if they're so much fat as just squat.
They look like fire
hydrants.
They look square.
Yeah, like a little cube back there.
Absolutely.
Trying to think. Let's see. Like,
dude, Fernando Valenzuela was kind of fat. The legendary Dodgers.
He was
pitcher.
Another guy who definitely wore it in his face. Like, he was a puffy face guy.
Yep. Well, dude, in the all-time kind of Twins fat guy, Kirby Puckett. You know
what's funny? Kirby wasn't fat. He was just
interesting.
Like he by the end of his career, he had gotten a little softer on the middle. But like he was just one of those guys who, I mean, he probably could squat 600 pounds.
Sure,
just a big, thick pair of legs,
strong,
and butt, and like just muscle. Because you go back and watch the '91 World Series. The man was, again, built very much fire hydrant-y, but the catch he made at the wall in game 6, he's a solid 3 feet off the ground, vertical. Like, he didn't push off the wall. He ran to the wall, paused, and jumped straight up in the air. and had, he was 5'8 and could dunk a basketball. So, I mean, he wasn't just the one motion guy. He was a good athlete too.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Let's see. Frank Thomas was squishy by the end, but again, he was just more really big framed than he was fat.
Man, absolutely.
I really feel like we're missing some fat pitchers here. Yeah. I wonder what Google will tell me if I just Google fat pitchers. Let's see. This is
fun. Do that. And while you're doing that, Pipe, I want to transition us into our
The first eight images are of Bartolo Colon.
Nice. There you go. So we did a good job, I think.
Yeah, let's see. All right, 25 greatest fat baseball players of all time. This is
there you go.
All right, let's see. Dimitri Young is listed on here.
Nice.
A bunch of guys we've never heard of. Man, they went back old school. Sid Fernandez.
80s, yeah, 80s I remember
Mets
that guy.
Pitcher.
Mets, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mo Vaughn. How could we forget Mo Vaughn?
Oh, yeah. Ultimate fat
guy. And he was like, yeah, he had like the squishy belly hanging over his belt. Levon Hernandez was pretty chunky by the end of his career.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Rick Ruschel is listed on here as well. Man, there's some good ones. Bob Horner. He was just another one who looked very dad-like.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of thick, kind of dad-like.
Yeah, David Wells, John Kruk, good, got those. Greg Luzinski.
I remember that name.
I didn't think of him as a fat guy.
No, just more like a thick white dude. Yeah.
Oh, how could we forget Prince Fielder, the son of Cecil Fielder?
Dude, second generation fat guy, man. Yeah. Those are the best.
Miguel Cabrera, that's a good one. Like, and the thing about Miguel Cabrera is Miguel Cabrera is all of us, you know, at his athletic peak when he comes into the league in his early 20s, and he's now 35, and he looks every bit of 35, you know.
Absolutely.
He's got the 35-year-old waistline, the 35-year-old saggy pants, all of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's
absolutely
Fernando's on here, Valenzuela, so they listed Kirby, they're wrong about that. Oh, and let's just finish it off with this one, Tony Gwynn. Yeah.
Tony Gwynn, dude. Again, though, almost like Kirby, was he fat or was he actually just
Tony was lean when he, like, through the 80s and early 90s, and then
that's true. He got
squishy, but he just had that, like, wave a wand bat style that
he became a one motion guy, like we talked about.
Yep.
You know, he could do one thing, and he just did that one thing insanely well. Pipe, I have to sign off here in a minute, but I want to actually end by recommending and talking about a sports movie real quick. So it had been a long time, probably since Moneyball, that I'd really seen a sports movie that blew my mind, that captured my imagination, that totally sucked me in. And, I saw the next one of these this last weekend. It's Borg versus McEnroe, the tennis movie that had Shia LaBeouf. Did you happen to see this movie, Pipe?
You know, you said two things that made me disinclined to see it. One was Shia LaBeouf and the other was tennis movie. But sell me.
Let's talk about your Shia LaBeouf problems. Why is that an issue for you? This is fascinating.
So the phrase no, 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 no is to him what all right, all right, all right is to Matthew McConaughey, except that he's more annoying. There was just like an angsty arrogance about him that just made me want to punch him every time I saw him for the first several movies of his career, which isn't to say he's never had a good performance.
Yeah.
But I just don't like him.
I think he's a phenomenal actor.
Around on him. He's just been in some terrible movies and had some terrible performances.
Dude, he's been in some great movies, though. He has done some terrible movies, though. In your defense, you're absolutely right. One of our favorite movies is this foreign thing called The Necessary Death of Charlie Countryman. If you ever have an evening and nothing to do, you should dial that one up when the girls aren't in the house, because it's pretty rough and gritty. But the whole thing takes place in Bucharest, Romania, and he's great in it. It's kind of a gritty, dramatic sort of romance thing, but yeah, he's incredible. That was really my first like appreciating Shia LaBeouf thing. And then this Borg versus McEnroe, unbelievable character study, great cinematography, just a beautiful like time and place kind of movie in terms of like Wimbledon in the 80s, and really just getting the fashion right, getting the set design right. And what it was basically a study of these guys who appeared very different. You know, Borg was sort of the machine-like, no feelings.
Yeah, like
on
a
the court.
Cyborg.
Yeah, he was like a cyborg. He was like a machine. And of course, McEnroe was like he shared all the emotions, you know. But in reality, per the movie, like, Borg was actually every bit as emotional as McEnroe. And in fact, the two ended up becoming like best friends later in life. They were
so
best man at each other's wedding. Shia LaBeouf played McEnroe, and some Swedish guy played Bjorn Borg, and he was incredible. He was really, really good.
It wasn't the guy who plays the guy from Game of Thrones, was it?
Dude, I don't know, man, because I'm not a Game of Thrones watcher, but it might be. You know, it might be. That's one that's worth watching. And it was interesting. I was watching it with KK, and she was like, she turns to me and she goes, you're John McEnroe with me, but you're Bjorn Borg, like, in public and with everybody else, which I thought was fascinating in terms of just kind of how fake Borg had to be to, like, control himself on the court.
That's how fake you are on this podcast.
That's how fake I am. Not on the podcast, but in most of my life. Yes, I am that fake. But
how else do you deal with the Lance Stevenson students in your life?
Totally.
You can't McEnroe them. You will be out of a job in a minute.
Dude, right. If I was like smashing my racket and screaming obscenities at every Lance Stevenson scenario, I would be out of there, you know.
Sverrir Gudnason plays Bjorn Borg. That's not somebody I'm familiar with, but
that's not the Game of Thrones guy.
No, but man, he looks like a Bjorn Borg. Like, just he has a look of, like, because Borg had that super just stone faced icy stare. Okay, now I want to see this. That does look good.
Dude, this guy had it, and he had a dreamy head of hair too. Unbelievable head of hair. Watch it for the hair. Watch it for the performances.
And you are a connoisseur of men's long locks.
I can't help myself, man. I can't help myself. But yeah, great movie. Actually, I watched it on a Friday night, and then Tristan and I woke up early Saturday morning, and I was telling him about it. He's like, "You want to watch it again?" And I'm like, "Heck yeah, man!" So I showed it to Tris Saturday morning. Watched it twice in 2 days. Great movie. Yeah, awesome. Let me know what you think of it once you get a chance to view
I'll
it.
Check it out for sure.
Yeah, Pipe. We have done what we always do on this program, man, and that we have wandered to and fro throughout some of these topics: NBA playoffs, the Lance Stevenson effect, fat baseball players, and until next time, Daniel Vogelbach.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Feeling stressed? Let's take better care of you. I'm Bonnie Gray, the host of Breathe, the Stress Less podcast. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.